good morning. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for being here today. We have two bills that are up for public hearing and possible work session. Because of the different individuals that have signed up to testify that have other obligations in the building or outside the building, what we're going to do is open up a public hearing for the purpose on House Bill 4044 for the purpose of taking Representative Barker's testimony. What we'll do after that, we'll recess it, and then we'll jump to 4003 and go through it and its hearing, and then we'll come back and finish up with 4044. So with that, we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 4044.
Chair Prezlansky, members of the committee, House Bill 4044 comes to you from Representative Barker. As you know, pawnbrokers must keep a log of every transaction in the pawn shop. There are three different logs that they have to keep a record of, and these must be done by hand or written form. House Bill 4044 allows all three registers to be kept in electronic form and delivered to the local police agency in electronic form as needed. You do have a proposed Dash 2 amendment, which modifies the structure of the measure a little. It allows the registries to be recorded in physical or electronic form and specifies that pawnbrokers may keep and submit the firearm registry in electronic or physical form. It is not ready to move with those Dash 2s today, but it is ready to move as the intro version, or we can wait on paperwork.
All right. So with that, let's go ahead and take Representative Barker's testimony. Jeff, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, I'm Jeff Barker, State Representative from House District 28. This bill is a simple bill that allows pawnbrokers who have to report everything on paper today to be able to do that electronically tomorrow or as soon as we get this bill passed. It just brings it up to current times. I think it's a simple bill, and that's all it intends to do. It's not something other than that. There was some concern that if once something was entered on a computer, the records would stay. I pointed out in the House that, for example, that we know that abortion was common in the time of Christ because we have records from the Romans with their formulas that were used for that. They didn't have computers. We still have the records, so I don't see that as a real issue. And this will just help modernize. I mean, it's 2016. It's time for everybody to be using electronic reporting for almost everything. So,
all right. Thank you. Questions for the representative? Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Appreciate it.
We're going to go ahead and recess House Bill 4044 at this point. We'll come right back to it. We're going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on House Bill 4003. Chyna?
Chair Prezlansky, members of the committee, House Bill 4003 comes to you from Speaker Kotek. As you might recall, you passed House Bill 2002 in the 2015 session, which prohibited profiling by law enforcement and created the Law Enforcement Profiling Work Group. You received a report from them December 1, 2015. This measure extends the sunset on that work group so they can continue their work.
All right, thank you. We have four individuals that have signed up at this point for giving testimony. I'm going to bring up a panel of Ellen Rosenblum as well as Aaron Knott first, and then we'll finish up with, at least with the ones that are signed up after that, Casey and Michael. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Prezlansky, members of the committee. My name is Ellen Rosenblum, and I'm the Attorney General for the State of Oregon. I come before you in support of House Bill 4003, which extends the existence of the Law Enforcement Profiling Work Group until December 1st of this year, 2016. Profiling by law enforcement is a longstanding and deeply troubling national problem that occurs when law enforcement targets people of color and other specific populations for criminal investigation solely because of their race, ethnicity, national origin, or other characteristics which have no relation to their criminality. When it occurs, profiling is profoundly destructive. Profiling alienates the community from law enforcement, causes the rule of law to lose credibility and trust, and discourages community members from relying on law enforcement for help. This in turn makes the investigation of criminal activity more difficult by making witnesses more reluctant to participate, and generally makes policing harder, less rewarding, and less credible in the eyes of the public. National statistics on profiling suggest that black drivers are more than twice as likely than white drivers to be arrested during a traffic stop, and that white drivers are far more likely to be let off with a warning. Additionally, people of color are more likely to be searched during a traffic stop. During the 2015 session, Oregon became the 31st state to explicitly ban profiling by law enforcement with the passage of House Bill 2002. This bill put into place a definition of profiling that is unique to Oregon, which prohibits a law enforcement officer from targeting an individual for suspicion of a law based solely on the individual's age, race, ethnicity, color, national origin, language, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, political affiliation, religion, homelessness, or disability. The bill also required all complaints alleging profiling by law enforcement to be shared with the Law Enforcement Contacts, Policy, and Data Review Committee, also known as LECC. Finally, House Bill 2002 formed the Law Enforcement Profiling Work Group. This group, appointed in equal measure by the governor, president of the Senate, and Speaker of the House, was asked to do three things. First, to propose a process to identify any patterns or practices of profiling. Second, to identify methods to address and correct patterns or practices of profiling. And finally, to prepare a report identifying any statutory changes needed, including recommendations for legislation, to the interim committees of the judiciary no later than December 1st, 2015. By statute, this work group was to be chaired by the Attorney General and staffed by the Department of Justice. The group was appointed on August 21st, 2015, met for the first time on September 14th. Between September 14th and December 1st, this nine-person work group met in varying combinations a total of 13 times, including two opportunities for public comment, which were held in Portland and Medford. The members of this work group worked very hard and very quickly to craft meaningful policy recommendations, which we outlined in a report filed to the legislature that was submitted on December 1st. I come before you today to describe the work we've already done briefly and to ask for your support in allowing us to continue this work for another year. Before I go any further, I want to thank the members of this work group. When I first learned the group would be given only 4 months to generate a report, I was frankly a little skeptical. The question of profiling, as noted, is extremely complex, and the solutions are neither easy nor obvious. To the last member, this group came together quickly, spoke openly, and worked always to find solutions to differences of opinion. If I could ask for your indulgence just for a moment and allow me to extend my thanks to these nine individuals by name: District Attorney John Haroldson from Benton County, Casey Jama, Anil Karya, Sheriff Jason Myers, Kimberly McCulloch, Brooke Reinhardt, Constantine Severe, Chief John Teague of Kaiser Police, and Irma Valdez. Each of them found time within universally busy schedules to give this issue the very serious attention it deserves, and they have our deepest thanks. You should each have before you a copy of the full report that was generated by the task force. The report is much too long to cover completely, so I'll call your attention to page 9, which covers the seven broad recommendations issued by this group. I want to discuss each of these with you again briefly. I'm mindful of the committee's time and will move quickly, so please ask any questions necessary to clarify any point which is not clear. Upon convening, the work group divided into three subcommittees, which we felt best captured the scope of the work to be done. The first of these, called the Law Enforcement Response Subgroup, focused on the steps law enforcement could take on their own initiative, improvements in training, complaint responsiveness, and other measures to take on the problem of profiling within their own management, culture, and structure. The second, the subgroup on data, identified that we cannot, in fact, identify patterns or practices of profiling without a data set from which these conclusions can be drawn. This subgroup worked to evaluate already existing libraries of data in Oregon, as well as examining the steps taken by other states to track data. The final subgroup, on law enforcement responsibility and transparency, asked the broad question of, so what? Once a pattern or practice of profiling is determined to exist, what should be done about it? All three subgroups returned conclusions which form the backbone of the seven recommendations, which I'll again briefly outline. First, training must be improved. House Bill 2002 created a complex and expansive new definition of profiling. This definition won't be worth much if our law enforcement personnel are not adequately trained to understand and effectively use it. We've also heard from community members that this training must be evaluated through the lens of cultural competency, and community stakeholders must be given the opportunity for participation and feedback. DPSST already provides significant training in this area, and over the coming months, I anticipate that members of this task force will audit and attend these trainings, as well as evaluating comparable trainings given by other states and jurisdictions. Second, the law enforcement response to complaints of profiling must improve. When a person makes a complaint of profiling to a law enforcement agency, they should be entitled to know what happened to resolve it. The task force heard that while many law enforcement agencies are extremely responsive to complaints, in some cases a complaining person can expect a call from the elected chief or sheriff themselves explaining the outcome. But there's no standard practice across Oregon, and some complaints simply disappear after they're made, leaving the citizen who made the complaint completely in the dark. This is unacceptable. This task force will work to create legislation, or propose legislation, that requires a response to be made within a reasonable time. Third, as written, House Bill 2002 requires that any profiling complaints made to a law enforcement agency be shared with the LECC, but nothing requiring law enforcement to share with the LEC how the complaint was resolved. Just as a complaining person should be entitled to a statement letting them know how their complaint is resolved, the LECC should be able to expect a statement of resolution, which will allow them to track in a broader way how long complaints are taking to be resolved and the rate at which these complaints are found to be held substantiated or unsubstantiated. A policy which simply finds 100% of all complaints unsubstantiated is not a functional policy. Fourth, the chiefs of police, sheriffs, district attorneys, LECC, and Attorney General have begun the task of working together to craft model policies to implement the requirements of House Bill 2002, including the timing and form through which complaint information should be shared with the LECC and best practices around the receipt and investigation of profiling complaints. This work will continue throughout the year, and the existence of the work group provides us with a unique opportunity to bring a wide array of stakeholders into that conversation. Fifth, we need to develop an accountability structure in response to allegations of profiling. This is the so what piece that I mentioned earlier. If data suggests the real possibility of a pattern or practice of profiling by law enforcement, the response must be meaningful. At the same time, no state-driven accountability system should displace the crucial internal investigations, functions, and autonomy of local law enforcement. Balance is crucial. In working toward an accountability structure suitable for Oregon, our work group looked to the system used by the Federal Department of Justice as a possible loose model for state legislation. Under this model, if the Civil Rights Division of the Oregon Department of Justice sees evidence of a pattern or practice of profiling, they investigate the matter and then, if necessary, enter into a collaborative discussion with the law enforcement body in order to provide technical guidance similar in nature to that provided by the U.S. Department of Justice. If these measures fail, the Department of Justice would publish the existence of the suspected pattern or practice of profiling, as well as any guidance provided to the legislature, the governor, the city or county in which the law enforcement body resides, and the U.S. Department of Justice. Six, most states which have taken on the issue of profiling have required the collection of data relating to traffic stops. Without clear data regarding who's being stopped by law enforcement, who's being cited, who's being subjected to a search, and who's being let off without a warning or with a warning, it is hard to imagine that our ability to identify patterns or practices of profiling could ever be fully informed. The work group has conducted a national review of programs implemented by other states, and if given the opportunity to continue our work, anticipates modeling these programs for possible implementation in Oregon. I wanted to note that I and the work group are aware of the very serious shortfalls in public safety funding levels in multiple Oregon counties and the need to avoid an unfunded mandate or a one-size-fits-all approach. There is a material cost, both in terms of officer time used and in terms of the cost of the collection, storing, and analysis of any data collected. That being said, we're only as smart as our data, and our existing data is simply not good enough. Finally, we should follow the lead of other states in requiring the publication of an annual report available to the public, which will guide policymakers, law enforcement, and the public with the tools they need to inform their decisions around law enforcement policy. The LECC has issued these reports in the past whenever possible, but inconsistent funding and inconsistent data have been consistent challenges. While I intend to fully investigate and develop each of these recommendations over the coming year, and look forward to that. I want to emphasize that this should not be taken as an exhaustive list. This work group was provided with only 4 months to develop our recommendations, and concessions were made because we simply didn't have time to consider everything possible. But I believe the recommendations already before you are the solid foundation for a meaningful and workable policy package in the 2017 session. Sitting with me is my legislative director, Aaron Knott, who worked as the primary technical drafter and researcher of this report, alongside my civil rights director, Arias Johnson, and the director of our criminal justice division, Michael Slauson. And so Aaron and I are happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? And Aaron, I'm assuming you're here just for the Q&A.
Chair Przanski, that's correct.
All right. Any questions for either? Senator Thatcher first.
I have a brief question based on some testimony we heard yesterday that was kind of interesting to me, that certain laws tend to target certain groups. That was the allegation. And so I'm wondering if that would be looked at, if certain laws on our books that create a crime would be looked at as, does this cause a disproportionate number of, you know, people of a particular minority group to be targeted or swept into it? I'm just wondering if that's also part of the discussion.
Chair Przanski, Senator Thatcher, that is something that was not discussed, but I would like to know more about what particular crimes were being discussed, and certainly it seems like something that we should put into the mix. I don't know if Mr. Knott has any...
Chair Przanski, Senator Thatcher, we've focused predominantly with what we've looked at so far as on traffic stop data. And the reason we've done that is mostly because it's the easiest data to control. Traffic stops all start the same way compared to, say, a situation where you think somebody is armed or something like that. That has a completely different law enforcement response. So we've kept it fairly narrow. There had been early on some discussion of drug laws in particular as being laws that can fall disproportionately on diverse communities. So I think that has been a subtext, but we never took it up as a particular issue. It's worth a deeper look.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Coming forward. So I have two other people that are currently signed up, Casey Jama and Mike Savagio. Want you to come up, and while they're coming up, is there anyone else who will want to testify on House Bill 4003? So good morning, gentlemen. Whoever would like to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio. I'm here representing the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs. We represent line officers and sheriff's deputies around the state. And I'm here to express our members' support of House Bill 4003, extending the profiling work group. I'm not going to try to speak as eloquently as our Attorney General, but I'll just note for the record that we're in support of it because we feel the work group has done good work. This is an issue that gets to the very core of public confidence in our law enforcement professionals. And I'll just also like to put on the record that as we have discussions around the standardization of reporting and processes and such, our membership would also like to be involved in that. And we actually do have one of our representatives on the work group currently, and I look forward to continuing discussions, and I'll just end there and wait here for any questions.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Casey Chama. Today I'm speaking as a member of the Law Enforcement Profiling Work Group, chaired by our Attorney General Ellen Rosenbaum, and as also as the executive director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing, a lead organization in the coalition advocating for HB 2002 and end of profiling legislation. We are the first grassroots organization working to build a multiracial, multi-ethnic movement for immigrant refugee rights. We believe that we are strongest both as an organization, as a society, when we respect each other, empathize one another, and struggle together for justice. CIA would like to congratulate the work that the Law Enforcement Working Group has done today. We would like to urge you and ask you for your support for HB 4003, which will expand the time and the work of the task force is trying to address. We have made tremendous progress in such short period of time, but there is much work to be done, and we ask you for your support. We believe that by creating a system that provides the tools and addresses these biases, including data collection, providing independent oversight and accountability, all of us will benefit from safer community, more collaborations and trust in and equal justice for everyone. We need accountability. I do think that focusing on a statewide system change can lead a strong police community. By focusing on root causes, we can address structural and institutional practices that foster disparate impact for marginalized communities and create pathway forward as a state. HB 2002 is a law that needs to be enforced, and the police should not be policing for themselves. We need monitoring and accountability at the state level to ensure departments are not profiling. And if they do so, we need ways to help them and address the issues that hold them accountable if they do not act so. We need understand the real impact of profiling statewide. We need law enforcement to collect accurate data in their contacts so we can better understand disparities. This will also help us to determine which jurisdictions are doing the right things. We need law enforcement who are culturally competent. Law enforcement agencies statewide needs cultural competency and implicit bias training, which with a curriculum that has proven to be effective. Departments need to be examined their hiring and retention process practices as to have police force that reflects the diversity of our community as we serve. These are some are the areas that Ending Profiling Workgroup did discuss, and you just had an update from our Attorney General. In addition, we want to emphasize that we will continue to develop recommendations that in the policy areas that we have already explored, like data collection, for example. There are some important issues that we simply didn't have time to address. So I would like the committee to address that it's more than just tinkering with our current recommendations. We also would like to explore issue areas such as how do we identify stop profiling that won't be identified as a stop data. Example, housing status, religious profiling, and so forth. How do we collect the data on the pedestrian stops? Whether or not to allow law enforcement suppression in criminal trial when person can show they were profiled. Consistent search of reforms on the procedural justice issues. We're asking you for additional time to flush out some of these as well. In conclusion, let me say that this has been some of the most meaningful work I have done around this issue. As a member of the working group, I have gained new insights and perspective. Everyone at the table come with open mind and willing to do the work, hard work. I appreciate for every one of our members of the work group, and I truly appreciate the leadership provided by our Attorney General and her staff, particularly Aaron Knott, who guided us through this process and also provided us expertise and logistical support. I thank you for your support, and I encourage you to support HB 4003. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either on the panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony. I'll just ask once again, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 4003? Not seeing anyone coming forward, we'll close the public hearing. Understanding we have the paperwork, so we'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 4003. Understand there's no amendments for this one.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4003 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4003 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Thatcher.
I would imagine that, you know, it's good to extend it, but I would bet that they might want to enhance this eventually and have a longer look at this.
Mm-hmm. So just in the sense that we'll watch it and
I think there's more.
Well, I agree.
We're just scratching the surface.
Yeah, perhaps. I think this is a continuation of what's happening. Hopefully during this period of time, the group will, in fact, be able to come back with additional recommendations and it seems to me in this day and time it may be ripe to have an ongoing presence to continue to have this in the future, to having the oversight. So good comment. Other questions, comments? Are there any objections to the motion that's before us? Not seeing any, so ordered. And let's see, who hasn't carried a bill from the committee yet? Oh, it's our newbie. So, Senator Rosenbaum, if you'd be so kind, we would be honored to have you carry House Bill 4003 to the floor.
Absolutely. I'd be honored to carry it.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4003. And we're going to reopen the public hearing we started earlier this morning on House Bill 4044. And with that, I have three people that are currently scheduled to give testimony. So I think what I'm going to do is, Paul, why don't you come up? And I think I'm going to go ahead and ask Andy Smith to come up with you, since you're more on the proponent's side. And I assume, Paul, you want to kind of get us going as to where we're at and what we need?
Sure. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm here representing the Oregon Palm Brokers Association with the Romaine Group, attorneys in Portland. 2 years ago, when we first had this issue presented to us by the pawnbrokers, we said this would be such an easy issue because all it was just being able to do something electronically that we already had to do manually. And then we ran into the gun bill. So I learned my lesson at that point. Nothing is easy in this process. The bill is very simple. Currently, we keep records under, pawnbrokers keep records under 726-280 in either written or electronic form. There are certain records under 726-285 that we keep also in written or electronic form, and we transmit those records to police agencies. There is another record-keeping provision, 166-427, where it's simply a written register prepared by the state police. And then we have to make a copy of that and send it to local law enforcement. We're not asking to do anything differently except do it all electronically. We keep most of our records electronically. There are some we don't keep electronically because we have to transmit them in written form. We think it's just the statute hasn't caught up to technology. It's very basic. And that's all the bill does. It doesn't change any obligation that we have or impose any new burden on anybody. We have no objection to the amendments that are going to be offered by the City of Portland. They just clarify what we believe is in the original bill. There's nothing they change. They just make changes to each of the three paragraphs rather than have one paragraph apply to everything, which is fine with us. And we would urge your support for the bill. It really is a bill that we should be able to do administratively, but we can't because the statute is very specific. It's a written register, so we need to change that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Andy?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Smith for the City of Portland, here in support of HB 44 with the -2 amendments. Our concern with the bill as drafted is that it appears to give pawnbrokers the option to file the register or the record electronically. The register is an abbreviated version of the record. We just want to ensure that law enforcement continues to have access to the record of the transaction. The -2 amendment simply puts into underlying statute that if you're going to file electronically, that the full record is still due to law enforcement within 3 business days. So we'd encourage the committee to adopt the -2 amendment, and we would be supportive of the bill with the amendment. And we appreciate the proponents working with us on this.
Thank you. Let me ask for questions. Senator Thatcher first.
Does this form have to be filled out only by pawnbrokers, or is this any federally licensed firearm dealer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, the form that we're most concerned about has to be filled out for anybody dealing with a used gun. The problem, I mean, used, not meaning that it was fired, meaning that it's been sold and resold. But the this statute only applies to pawnbrokers because last time when you passed this bill out, it applied to everybody, and we just sort of got caught up in the whole gun debate. So all we decided to do this time is just take care of the people who we are paid to take care of and say pawnbrokers, who are incredibly highly regulated, they can't sneeze without somebody looking at them, can do this electronically. Now, I will say one thing about the particular statute. It's probably repetitive and maybe unnecessary, the underlying statute that we're talking about, 166.427. However, it is on the books. The prospects for it being eliminated are between slim and none, at least in probably my lifetime. So we don't believe that elimination will solve. Well, if that was an option, we would take it. And I think that's the position that another speaker may talk about.
All right. Other questions, comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Roger Byer. Roger, why don't you come on up? And as he's coming up, I'm seeing not anyone else in the room, but I'll put out the call. If anyone else wants to give testimony on House Bill 4044, raise your hand. All right.
Roger.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. My name is Roger Byer, here representing the National Rifle Association of America. Before you is House Bill 4044, I believe is the right number. I didn't write that down in my paper, but I think that's right.
Yep.
I got the right one. Okay. This bill is only for one class of gun dealers, those who are licensed as pawnbrokers. So I'd like to give you a little bit of background on this issue. So in 1989, Oregon adopted ORS, which became ORS 166-427, which creates a registry of used firearms. This was prior to the instant background check system that we have now in the state of Oregon and at the national level. In 1995, Oregon adopted a bill which became ORS 166-421, which allows any person for no charge to check to see if a gun is stolen with the Oregon State Police. Any pawnbroker can and likely does do this check before they accept a gun into their shop. If they don't and the gun later turns out to be stolen, the gun is useless to them and it has to be turned over to the police. So it's hard to believe that a gun dealer, i.e. a pawnbroker in this case, would not do this instant free check before they take this gun into their possession. Then in 1998, the federal government instituted the Brady system, which was the national instant check system. Oregon does not use that system, but it is there. At the federal level, through the national instant check system, the what's known as denial enforcement and intelligence and NICS intelligence branch is required to check pawn shop transactions within, make sure I get this right, within 3 days to make sure that guns that are being checked into pawn shops are not stolen. So we have a system that without ORS 166-427 completely is checking for stolen guns at all gun dealers and pawn shops included. So therefore ORS 166-427 is completely unnecessary and is just extra paperwork for all gun dealers, not just pawnbrokers. ORS or NRA opposes the creation of and the maintaining of a registry of used guns or gun transfers. ORS 166-427 is just that, is a registration of used guns and gun transactions. The police, the local sheriffs, whoever these informations are turned over to, have no requirements to destroy the records once they found the guns are not stolen or are stolen, either one. These records can be maintained forever by local law enforcement. So short of elimination of 166-427, which we think is most appropriate action for this committee to take, but it would not fit under the relating to clause of this bill, we believe a paper trail is less onerous than an electronic trail on gun owners. We further, if you are going to amend this bill, which it sounds you're going to with the dash two amendments potentially, We would ask that you redraft the amendment and require the local law enforcement to destroy the records after a certain number of days turned over to them. If the records were destroyed, we would probably, our objection to the bill would go away, because at least there's not then a registration made of the guns and the gun transactions. So, Mr. Chair, with that, we oppose the bill in its current form. If it was amended to eliminate the transaction records, we would be less objectionable to the bill. We still believe that elimination of ORS 166-427 is the correct action to take by the legislature. But as we recognize that cannot fit into this bill, we'd appreciate at least an amendment redrafted to require the destruction of the records. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. Questions? All right, I don't see any. I guess I'll just say that it seems like for the 166-427 discussion, that's really a work group or outside of this assembly's dealings during the short session, because, as you said, relating clause is one issue. Number two, it's a policy issue that would need to be looked at. So if that's something that you're interested in doing, we may be willing to see if we can accommodate looking at that to see whether that's still necessary. But what I see at this point and what I understand is that what we're trying to do is streamline and update the current procedure that's used in written records as to just being electronic. I would assume that there's probably, and we didn't hear a testimony, but I'd be somewhat surprised that many of these records, once they are actually filed, aren't already being scanned into some type of electronic form for storage, in the sense of having them filed as compared to having hard copy that for storage space. So the interested about the 421 as to the free checks, how that applies to the 427, because it seems to me the 421 is a tool that individuals can use to determine before they buy a gun that's used whether it's been registered as being stolen. And 427, I didn't hear the testimony. Maybe the testimony is for that statute. It is it exclusively there for determining whether the gun is stolen?
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding, is that that's why the statute was put in place in 1989, was a way for local police to find out what's coming into pawn shops, and they can check it against their stolen gun records in order to make sure that the pawn shops aren't receiving stolen guns.
So the only way that we could actually ensure that 427 was being carried out, we would then basically have to require or mandate used dealers or dealers of used guns, whoever and however that would be defined, that they would have to be obligated to doing 466.421, the quote-unquote free check, to actually ensure that it's being done.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It is not a mandate now. I can't imagine any gun dealer not doing that, because as I stated, if you bring a used gun into your possession that's later found to be stolen, you can't sell that gun then. Right. And that would be discovered when you're doing the background check trying to sell the gun. So it would just, it doesn't make sense that a dealer wouldn't be doing that.
I appreciate that, but as you and I both know, there are probably instances why people may not want to have any dealings with the government, whatever it might be. Any other comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, do you think it could be possible to amend it to require that free check like you just talked about? I don't remember the number. In lieu of this report?
I would say in this day and time, since we have to have everything posted by Thursday of this week, I don't see us having the time to actually have the discussion, let alone doing the drafting and bringing people on board to making that type of policy shift and change. Again, as I mentioned, the chair is more than willing to open up some type of a work group to look at some of these issues and see how we can update current statutes. But at this stage, in this short session, I don't see that being the appropriate thing to do without having the time to ensure we don't have unintended consequences, whatever those may be, positive or negative. So, but that's something we can look at if we want to do that during the interim.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just recalling last session we had this discussion that it was a redundant form, that it was completely redundant, and I understand that, you know, they're trying to, you know, just make life easier at the pawnbrokers, but then again, it's redundant. And so it seems like we should look at getting rid of one of those.
And I don't disagree with that. I think that's something that we can do. It's just that we can't do it between today and the end of the session, a short session, because of the timing that we have for having stuff posted and to have a deliberative conversation about it. But clearly, if this is something you'd like to see us move forward, it'll be interesting to see how many of the different individuals within the industry would be, and advocates within the industry, willing to sit down and have those discussions.
Well, I see miracles happening every day here.
Yeah.
Things getting through this session quickly.
So that sounds great.
I think if we wanted to, we could.
All right. Any other comments, questions? Roger, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
you. So what we're going to do at this point, because I do feel that there's a at least a discussion that needs to be had regarding the dash twos. We don't have the paperwork to consider moving those today. I guess the two ways we could handle it, we could adopt the amendments and wait for the paperwork to catch up if committee members are comfortable moving the amendment into the bill. If not, at this point, and you want to think it over, we can just roll this over till tomorrow, carry it over, and then look at adoption of the amendment and or moving the bill as it was originally written.
Let's just do it all at one time.
Okay. All right. With that, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4044. And what we're going to do at this point is we're going to put on the record that we'll be carrying over House Bill 4044 for the purpose of work session. We'll carry that over till tomorrow. Is that
8:30?
At 8:30. And hopefully we'll have the paperwork and we can have those discussions. Any other comments, questions? With that, we're going ahead and adjourn for today, and we'll see everyone hopefully tomorrow morning at 8:30. We're adjourned. Tomorrow morning at 8:30. We're adjourned.